Welcome to Bread for the Head on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm your host, Mark Sefton. If you work in the health industry, you spend your entire life taking care of everyone else. But what are you feeding your own mind? Every week on this show, we are breaking bread on the thoughts, the ideas, and the habits that shape our inner world. It is time to stop running on empty and start intentionally nourishing your mind so you can stay healthy, resilient, and inspired. Both inside and out. Pull up a chair and let's go and eat. Welcome to the very brand new Bread for the Head on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm your host, Mark Sefton. Today we're going to be exploring nervous system regulation, subconscious patterns, and why true healing begins with safety rather than willpower. My guest is the incredible Caroline Middlesdorf, an international psychologist, trauma expert, author, and host of the Real Raw Authentic podcast. Having navigated complex PTSD and rebuilt her life from the ground up, she brings both deep clinical knowledge and authentic lived experience to her work. She helps people move out of survival mode, release shame, and nourish their minds from the inside out. I can't think of anybody better to headline this new show, Bread for the Head, than Caroline Middlesdorf. I really want to give you a warm welcome to the show, Caroline.
Thank you, Mark. You almost make me cry.
Well, that was the goal. It's a shame I didn't make it. It was close.
Good. I have teary eyes. No one can see it, unfortunately, but I do. Thank you so much for the warm welcome.
I think that the nucleus of Bread for the Head and the work that you do and all the people that you impact, I honestly do believe you're the best person to launch this show with me. So honestly, sincerely, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited and congratulations to you.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of my thoughts always when collaborating is a rising tide lifts all boats. And I just love the fact that whenever I go to like the sea or the ocean or a harbor, and you see the varying different boats. You see the scraggly ones that are desperately in need of paint. Then you see the glorious yachts. And yet the tide is lifting them all at the same. And that's the benefit, I think, of creating relationships like this one, where we can create the win-win, where there's enough to go around.
True. And I love it. I love creating impact together.
That's the way it is. Now, I know what Bread for the Head means for me. I would love to know, Caroline, from your perspective, when you first heard the words Bread for the Head, what did it really conjure up in you? What do you think it's really about?
Bread for the Head, when you send it to me, and I was like, what a great name, because bread is also something, it's not just a base, sort of base of nourishment. It's like, for me, it's like, this is feeding the head with important things. Like the baseline of basically what you need. That's bread for me. Bread is a basic, simple thing to eat, but it's like, it's exactly this. Digestible, very easy, good information brought for everyone or to everyone.
Perfect. I mean, for me, that you captured it beautifully. And I think that on the UK Health Network, it's all about being healthy and conscious. And even the owner, you know, he was given, you know, 3 months to live. And I believe is 17 years that was ago. And so that's what inspired this network. And it's all about educating people to live their best life. And how often, Caroline, I'm sure that you agree with this, that a lot of physical illness is the result of emotional and mental stress and trauma that hasn't been processed or allowed to be released. And so we all have a duty to ourselves and to our mind to take care of it.
Yes, exactly. And I think it starts, and I think that's why I love the title also so much, it starts with understanding. Once we understand something, and it can be exactly that, the mind-body connection, how, for example, suppressing our emotions impacts our physical health. Once we have the understanding, then we go into the how-tos. And that's what I love about your title.
Yeah, I love it. Well, like I said, I'm really excited to go deeper with you on this and just to see what we can create over the next 12 months here on the UK Health Network. really wanting to get into educating our minds. You know, I've got lots of different thoughts on this. The fact that, you know, I kind of have been thinking about like mind obesity, the fact that if we fill our brains with fear, with doubt, with shame, with some of the more negative parts of us, it really then translates into having what I call a fat head, which doesn't have substance, which isn't able to be resilient or have grit, because we're constantly being tossed by the nature of our circumstances rather than actually taking the time to fuel our minds, prime our minds, and get our minds ready to absorb, to grow, and to function how they were created, because our mind is a massive tool.
That's very true. I absolutely agree. It's a great tool if we know how to channel it.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll come on to some of that channeling as well as we go deeper. Now, Caroline, one thing that you teach is that real healing and mindset change begin with safety and not willpower. Why is pushing through with sheer determination the wrong kind of fuel for our overwhelmed nervous system?
It's exactly what we just talked about, the mind. The mind, if channeled the right way, with, let's say, and fed with the right kind of information, then we also basically can step out of or step into our real healing journey. Because so often, and that's the beauty of being a human, of course, I mean, we have a very capable and very adaptable and very smart brain, but the brain is also a record of the past and works hand in hand with our body, and that's our nervous system. And they send messages in some ways to each other. So we can, in a survival mode, basically instinct from our brain or of our brain is to think things through, to overanalyze things through and create that safety net in staying stuck in our head. And that's what a lot of people experience these days. We can think our healing, we can think our emotions, but we are actually shying away from feeling it, because that's the not so glamorous part that people don't really want to talk about it, because it is ugly, it's painful, it's not really nice. But that's where real healing lies, and it's a buzzword, but that transformation that people are seeking. So you can eventually stay stuck in that thinking, and the willpower alone, if not channeled the right way, keeps you stuck where you're at. And that's a huge frustration point for many.
I feel like there's so many different ways we could go on this conversation alone. But that idea of, you know, a lot of people out there aren't giving themselves the opportunity to feel, you know, they're suppressing, that they're running and they're keeping busy to be able to not have to really feel how they're really feeling in their body, in their mind, in their spirit. And, you know, I know that both you and I have done the work of feeling, and the interesting thing with feelings, emotions is, you know, they're feedback, they're important diagnostics to tell us kind of where we are and what we do. And I think, you know, it's a little bit like if you haven't been to the dentist for a long time and you go and have a checkup and your gums bleed because you haven't really looked after your teeth for so long. Yeah, there is a bit of pain. But the benefit of doing that is that it prevents further problem down the road. And I think it's the same with being attuned to our emotions. They're not always easy to sit with, but actually if you don't, they'll you know, cause you issue further down the road. And so yeah, it's so good just to be able to sit with yourself.
It really is, because if you don't, and that's why the numbers in mental health, and particularly, let's say, around burnout are so high, is because we are stuck in these productivity loops. It's hyped. It's hyped through also social media, to the workplaces, to stay productive, to keep going, and the mind is then working against us and sends us the harsh inner critic inside of ourselves that compares us to others, that basically tells us to keep going. That disconnects us even further from the body. And I don't know if you want to go already that way, but it doesn't stop just with feeling your feelings. I think that's where people are also slightly confused. And this might take away from my own healing journey, but also the people I've helped with. It's not just learning to feel your feelings, but to actually upgrade and update your core beliefs?
You know, I think that we all need healing. I don't think there's anybody that doesn't. And obviously, we're all on a healing journey. I think sometimes it almost becomes the other side of the coin, where actually when they identify that there's something in their life that needs healing, there's a sense where they feel broken or not enough. How do we protect ourselves from having a healthy understanding that healing is a journey without us feeling like, you know, we're broken or we're not good enough because we're in this transition of identifying there's something that's in our past that causes us injury?
There's also reframing, and that's maybe a bit of a mindset thing, because the reframing, what you're describing, is these feelings of inadequacy, broken, not good enough, this unworthiness wound playing out, it's the harsh inner critic inside of ourselves. That's basically, and I know people will be like, oh my God, why are you using that word trauma? But trauma is wound. That's trauma speaking. That's you in survival mode. These are your indicators. You're basically in it. But it's about reframing it also from your mind's perspective, instead of criticizing yourself in your healing journey, rather viewing it as, wait a minute, everything that's playing out right now, even if it costs me, let's say, my mood, my mental health at this point, I'm having anxiety or depression, but it was once somewhere, and you might not even recall when, something that protected you, because your brain and your body, that means also your nervous system, are never your enemies. There's also nothing, and I hate these words, fixing, because it's not about fixing things. It's becoming aware of what used to protect you. And that's a very different spin on your mindset of, like, instead of adding and doubling down on the shame, on the criticism, rather viewing it with compassion and understanding and be like, I see it now. Because once you see it, you cannot unsee it. But then from there on, you hold, and that's what I like much better and prefer it myself personally also. I rather am empowered instead of shamed. And going on a journey feeling empowered with that sense of, I get it now, and I'm here to reconnect, and I have the tools, the skills, and the how-tos of how to change these wirings, these beliefs, these things that currently, as in for now, cost me my mental health or my physical health. But the empowering element in it is huge and absolutely different. And there, your mind is important, and knowledge and self-awareness.
I think reframe is one of the most beautiful gifts of psychology that I'd experienced during COVID, where when you get stuck on a belief and you've got that internal tape that internalizes, you know, something like, maybe I'm not that lovable, or maybe I'm not that important, or maybe I'm not at the front of your mind because you're unavailable to me, and you go on that loop. And then the reframe of actually realizing this isn't actually about whether I'm lovable or important or a priority. It's actually about the other person's inability to have dealt with their truth, their reality, where they are. And I think, you know, I remember hurting myself a lot by taking responsibility for other people's not being available. And I think once I made that shift, the amount of healing and peace and empowerment that I found was cuckoo. If I'm honest, it was amazing.
I can imagine, but this is also the mindset shift. But on the other hand, and that's something I would want to challenge or ask the viewer and listeners to think of, think about, where's there a familiarity for you in it? Because often we think we've wrapped our personality around a certain way of being and living, and that can be exactly a role we fell into. And I'm writing about this also in my book that's going to come out next year. But we have roles we really jumped into growing up. And that can be, for example, I become the emotional caretaker. I need to make sure, in order to stay loved, connected, or be part of the family system or the school or the, you know, extended basically environment, that you learned to please or to fawn. That's maybe the more correct word for it. There was no choice in it. You learned, if I make someone else happy, that means I tap into their emotions, into their well-being, then I am, and that's a nervous system matter, not a mindset thing, I am safe. You get a short-term relief of them smiling, them being happy, or them giving you a hug because you did something for them. and your nervous system perceives it without seeing it. So that's not a brain, it's your nervous system wiring of like, this is the way I stay connected. And here takes root your role, where you start eventually neglecting over time. There's different ways that can play out, of course, in your life, but let's go on with this pattern that you start learning. I neglect my own needs. I don't even need to tap into it because it's not necessary in order to stay safe, connected, and loved and seen, even for a glimpse of a moment. I need to make sure my environment is okay, the people in my environment. And there is the people pleaser, the fawner created as an example that shows up later in your life as an adult, even though you might have now the awareness around it. Your nervous system cannot see it. It runs off on familiarity. So if you meet someone again in your life, and most of the time, romantic relationships, friendships, workplaces are the biggest trigger. There, you will fall into the same role that you are familiar with. So it's not just about the mindset, and that's a huge helper in the beginning, understanding that's not my responsibility, the way they react towards me. It's not basically determine my worth, how I feel about myself. But the deeper work is even deeper than that. It is about rewiring basically the role that you are so familiar with and we are so deeply attached to because we now as an adult call it, but this is how I am, and that we think it's our personality. But it moves us away from our true authentic self and often keeps us, and that's what I'm saying, if you're happy with the way that you are, please don't change. But if you feel you are stuck in survival mode, that means you're in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. That means you're constantly activated, stressed, or overwhelmed. Then it's worthwhile looking into this and going on that deeper journey of not just, let's say, mindset shift, not just regulation. And I think that maybe we can talk about this more, but actually going into the deep rewiring of those roles and core beliefs.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
What would that look like, Caroline, if I wanted to rewire my role? What would that look like?
I'm helping a lot of people right now in my program with it, and it's fascinating to witness because what you're seeing is people receive, and that's what we all need. In order to really, let's say, go onto the journey, we need to have understanding why are we doing this. So that means also we need the right kind of information. What is trauma? There's often also these invisible things. What's survival mode? How does this show up in my body? What does it do to my brain? How is my past? And I know it's very annoying for people because it's often a long, long time ago. How is my past playing out here? Because these formative years wire us deep to the core. They are there to wire our nervous system. It can keep on shaping, of course, later on in our life. It's not set in stone. but this is the beautiful part in the healing journey. It can change even from here onwards into the future as well. And that's the next part. Most people, let's take an example of people don't like those, let's say these attachment styles, for example, the avoidant, that person that doesn't want to go deep with you into feelings, is often almost the most shamed attachment style there is. It's also a very difficult one to deal with. But let's say someone like this, just for the simplicity of the example, comes and says, I want to heal. I want to learn how to feel. They have a nervous system that is wired deep to the core, that feelings are overwhelming, a threat, and shouldn't be present. There is a lot of shame wrapped around this. So talking to them and sitting down with them and telling them what you need to feel and how do you feel, will not move the needle. They might even cognitively understand why feeling would be important to them. But the nervous system is so their window of tolerance basically is so small for feelings that it throws them basically out of the window of tolerance. They get so overwhelmed, and the only way they would be able to basically come back to themselves, regulate themselves, would be in isolation and far away from people, even from love. So you cannot overlove them either. So what's their work? Let's start with giving the understanding of like, what's the window of tolerance? What's survival mode? What's childhood trauma? And how does this shape my behaviors, the way that I show up in my daily life? That's also what you see in my contents, the stress cleaner or other behaviors that you see. These things show up as in patterns in your life, and they show up also in your relationships. And once you have that knowledge, that's basically step one. The awareness, the right kind of information. What does it do to my nervous system? It basically constantly activates me. I need to run away or isolate. I cannot go deep. Then the next level comes, and that's nervous system regulation. And nervous system regulation is not the healing part in terms of that rewires everything. It's the one that you learn through specific practices. And that's, for example, somatic practices. Yes, that can be also yoga, slowing down. It can be meditation, it can be grounding, it can be the body scan. There are tons of things for nervous system regulation out there. That is also something that allows you to eventually basically practice with your body. Let's sit down. Let's slow down. Think of the example before, Mark, that we were talking about. People basically being in a productivity loop, not able to sit down with their body. That's the nervous system being so restless that it had also associated rest with unsafety. That's the same with people associating love, true affection, emotional intimacy with unsafety. So that's a nervous system thing. It's a physical issue. So learning to regulate through slowing down, practices that were somatic, body-centered, helps you to allow yourself to sit with possible emotions that could come up. Uncomfortableness. And here is my personal take, because I've done it all myself and helped many people. This is not where it ends. It's not just self-awareness and go to your yoga or to stretching or to somatic exercises. No. Now comes the memory-based nervous system rewiring work, or parallel wiring, because your old beliefs are there. That means old belief would look like, I'm unworthy. I'm not good enough. At the end of it, people leave me anyway. It's a loneliness wound, abandonment wound. We can name that. These are core beliefs, and there's a lot of fear sitting underneath this that wires basically and activates also our nervous system. And there we need to go into not just feeling through difficult feelings, but actually creating new felt experiences. That means I need to travel through anger, through sadness, even if I am not even sure if I have them, but maybe you felt them in the regulation part. And that can be linked to, as in present now, triggers of like my partner, my colleague, my best friend has triggered me into, let's say, any anger, or something from the past where you were not seen, not met, where you couldn't express, where you were helpless and powerless, and your mind and your body protected you from expressing your truth. And that's the important element in it. There is the witnessing part. We as human beings, we need to be witnessed in emotional experiences, in these vulnerable moments, and receive a different outcome. What does this mean? I am angry. I'm angry and I'm expressing my truth. And at the end of it, I'm not going to be punished for it. This is how it looks like in a therapy setting. In a group setting, like for example, in my course, it looks like that people share or they do their work and they realize they're still held. They're still part of the group. They're not abandoned. There's many, many different aspects to it. But it is about learning to speak your truth, and your nervous system needs the consistency at the end of it. It's like a training. Constantly, it's very physical. It's almost, the people describe it, the best way I can say, I need to take people's words. It's like, it's terror. It's anxiety. It's uncomfortable. It's really difficult. But with the nervous system regulation tools you have, plus the knowledge, plus the practices, you're able to rewire and go again and again. And eventually, you have new felt experiences. And I've witnessed this many, many times from I am super unworthy, I'm this small, to no, actually, there's a possibility that's not even true. That's something I have learned. I am worthy. And not because I'm achieving or I'm beautiful or X, Y, Z. No, because I am me. And that's okay. And that's what people forget. The most important relationship you will ever, ever have in your life is the one with yourself, but it's the first one that you neglect when you are in survival mode and deal with overwhelm or traumas. And that's basically it.
Yeah. I mean, I double down on the relationship with self. Everything derives from that. We're with ourselves 24/7. The amount of times, Caroline, that I've wanted to jump out of my own body and be like, Mark, enough, like it happens. But we all have that. One thing that I just wanted to pick up on, like relationally about speaking your truth. Mm-hmm. I find it really interesting because I don't always think that it's healthy to have a relationship where you're not speaking your truth because you are afraid that you're going to be rejected, or maybe that person will even break up with you. And I think it's really important that we hold space for people to share their truth, to have a meltdown, to have a moment of vulnerability. And actually, you just hold that. I see that with the healthy masculine and healthy feminine, as a healthy masculine man in his energy, holding space for, you know, someone that I care about to have a moment where they literally let rip. Maybe they'll later on be embarrassed or think, you know, what's come over me. But I think, you know, knowing that it's okay to share your truth, and it doesn't mean that I'm going to break up with you, and it doesn't mean that I'm going to reject you, I think it's so important. And I think some people don't open up because of that. They're like, what happens if I mess up? What happens if I don't say the right thing?
That's a very, very fair point, a very good point. But this is and I'm no couples therapist, but I've seen this work out many times, because communication is not the issue in any relationship. It is how you perceive what's been communicated. And that's an individual thing that you need to work on, and your partner equally. And that's the willingness, I think. And that's also something that is very tough to say, basically, to society, but this is what it demands to have a successful relationship, that it takes two people wanting to, and that's what we've missed in so many ways. And I'm actually also saying this is a big red flag to our education system. We have not been taught to emotionally mature. And that's something that is, again, a nervous system matter of, like, if I am able, and I like it simple because I like the solution, step-by-step oriented things. If you are able to look into your own self and deal with emotions, and you can hold, let's say, your anger, and you're able to travel through your own sadness, that means not just difficult emotions, but it's also the wonderful ones, joy, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, the whole facet of all of the emotions. And you're exploring your internal world. you're starting to build a rapport and a connection within yourself. That's the whole thing when you hear that quote of like, you can only meet someone as deep as you've been and gone and traveled yourself. That's the work that will, in my point of view, bring successful relationships and less breakups, because you're able to tolerate the criticism from another person and you're not listening through their words as your triggers. You're actually listening as it is what it is. It's like they're unhappy with something and you're not becoming defensive. Your ego doesn't kick in. You're not overwhelmed by shame, which is often the case. People don't say it, but that's because it's a lot of fear around it. So what happens if in a relationship you start saying, I'm not happy? You get curious because you've been curious about yourself before. And if that first relationship you're curious about, eventually, because you have this more mature level of, I'm able to trust myself, I'm able to hold emotions, I understand myself better, I can quote unquote reparent myself better, I make decisions that are healthy but sometimes tough. This is emotional maturity. And that also will save your relationships, but that's an individual work. And then it's the one we choose each other day in and day out. And we're having difficult conversations, wonderful conversations, but we're doing it together as well as individually.
So good. Now, you mentioned red flag. And I think, you know, red flags are hilarious in one way, because everybody talks about them, especially in the dating world. Like, oh, I saw a red flag, or he showed me a red flag. Do you believe that we all have red flags? And what is your thought? Because I heard somebody on social media talk about, actually, the people that are kind of saying and talking about red flags are the ones that you should stay away from the most, because they're already looking for the problem. They're already looking for what's wrong. And having that sort of like mindset isn't necessarily a good person for you to choose. I'd love to know your thoughts on that.
I have a very different take on it, because what you're describing and the way you're describing is, and a lot of obviously awareness work, but you can very deeply be stuck in it and then suddenly it becomes a whole list. And I think that's also the issue with modern dating now. You have a whole list of what you don't want and what could be a potential red flag. And so easily once you see a red flag, you're like walking away and moving on to the next. We all have a fair share amount of maybe potential red flags. It is more about what is actually healthy for your nervous system and actually connects you on that deeper level. And that's where we're still at and where the confusion lies. If you have never, ever done any inner work, if you've never done that nervous system healing attempts, at least, then you will always, if you have, and if you're not one of those quote unquote lucky ones, even though I am not fully agreeing with the attachment styles again, because they can be shifted and you can move. If you're not one of these lucky, secure ones, but if you're more anxious or avoidant or fearful or disorganized, however you want to call it, you will fall into your familiar pattern. And that and all of these are deeply linked to what you're familiar with. That's your nervous system. And that's most likely to how you had to show up in the past to be connected. So this means work lies in you. You go and continue dating. And it's not about the list of red flags. It's about learning. And that's a different matter. What does it feel like? And how can I trust my nervous system that it does give me the right kind of message? And that's where still the confusion lies. Because the short-term relief of your anxiety, that can also be a trauma bond. So that's not necessarily your nervous system saying, this is good, this is actual love and safety. No, that's short-term relief. Nervous system safety and quote-unquote, let's say, healthy love takes time to build and needs time to recognize if this is continuously makes you feel good, makes you feel safe, and if it allows you to show up as you are without masks, without having to be tongue-tied or doubting or overthinking whether you can say something or not.
Yeah, I love it. And I also think that the more that you listen to your own voice and you give your voice a platform and you find safety within you, it becomes so much easier to then find it in others. but I always think that it always comes from that. I think that's one of the biggest breakthroughs I had. So I always was looking for safety elsewhere until I realized, Mark, it's until you find safety within you, which is about sitting with your emotions, yes, sitting with your feelings, right? And then it's out of that. That's security. You know, that nervous system regulation, it's not external to me. Like we are always looking for safety somewhere else. Where do I belong? Where do I fit in? But you belong to you. You find safety in you. And that's the bit, I think, where the penny dropped for me, where I was like, wow, I've been looking and hoping that somebody affirms me, encourages me, approves of me, says that I'm handsome, says that I'm good enough. And yeah, it wasn't until I looked in the mirror and said, you know what? I approve of you. You know, that's where things really started to change for
it's
me.
Beautiful. It is beautiful. And it's the most, but it requires, and that's the honest truth, it's not hard work. It's just different kind of work. It's not that I'll think more, I'll read more books. It's just the rather slowing down, the rather being very specific, allowing these feelings to not just surface, but allow you to travel through them, to speak the truth. And I love that empty chair practice, for example, where you really express yourself to an imaginary person. Can be someone that's real, obviously, in your life, but you imagine him sitting there, but you're expressing your truth. There is a lot of evidence-based practices that actually help you to rewire that memory-based, basically, nervous system. That's such an empowerment. It's life-changing. Once you have that, you will never lose it.
Radio. UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And I came across this idea, and for the most part, I managed to connect with it, but maybe you'll be able to add a little to this, Caroline. Mm-hmm. I came across this idea that when you meet the needs in yourself, everybody else is off the hook. Now, at that point, when I heard it, I was like, it felt quite liberating, because I almost felt at that point when I heard it, I was quite needy. I think I was emotionally needy, like for attention, for validation. And when I heard that, I thought that feels really empowering, because now if I can meet it in me, then I don't need, you know, or project that neediness and almost feel like I'm pulling on people that I feel like should be given to me because they're in relationship, they're in connection with me. And I managed to make great progress with that. And then the bit where I'm kind of like, I'm like, and then it just doesn't go the full way is probably because if I think of me, My love language is physical touch, right? Now, me hugging myself, like I've got my arms around me now, you know, it feels nice, but I know that, you know, if me and you were to have a hug right now, it would feel, you know, a lot nicer. And then it's like, how can I meet that need in me when actually, for me, there is a limit to how good that feels, you know, because for me, touch says, I see you, I feel you, you are important to me, you matter, as well as it actually physically feeling nice.
Which I understand. But it's also, I totally understand what you're saying. But not everything has to be, not every need that you have has to be fixed or healed by yourself. If you have the awareness and you've done the work, what action can you take? You can go to a community. You can go to church. You can join a club or something where you meet. And that's the empowering part, where you can meet people, like-minded people, where you find potential people who have similar needs or similar like that, or want to give that hug, or, you know, so it's not that we are, and that's a healthy response. If you look at that need, you have a need of connection. You have a need of being surrounded by people. That is a very healthy, and sometimes it's a healthy response to an unhealthy environment or something we've been trained to be in, loneliness. So that way of thinking is very healthy, yet painful. So the action is, I'll try to find it, but based on what I know now, based on what I've learned. So I'm not minimizing that need. I'm also not pushing it aside or shaming it when it comes up, because I have a need like everyone else out there for human connection, closeness, and it's actually the opposite of loneliness. So very healthy. It's just harder in modern days to find these communities, to find people with that similar, let's say, openness for it.
Now, you've highlighted shame as one of the most overlooked trauma responses. How does that hidden shame poison our internal mental monologue, and how can we begin to dissolve it?
Shame is one of the biggest keepers, because shame creates a lot of instability, not just in our mind, actually, also in our nervous system. Shame comes with a lot of guilt also. It comes with that harsh inner critic that basically it shouldn't be there, or whatever is inside of us is not good enough. That's exactly these, let's say, pointers that also trigger a lot of anxiety, insecurities inside of ourselves, and are the fuel to self-doubt. And self-doubt is where it makes basically our identity slowly and gradually chip away. And we're starting to hide behind masks. If you think of masks, how can a mask look like? If someone asks you, for example, you have that deep need of connection, of a hug, and someone asks you, hey, Mark, how are you doing? And you're saying, oh, I'm fine. Your honest truth would be, maybe I'm okay, but actually I'm in deep need of a hug. But shame, and that's fear-based, because you're not sure about the response of the other person. They would might cringe, weird, awkward. I don't know the guy. I don't know, you know, depending on who you meet. But shame obviously keeps you away from expressing your truth. That means often, and that's not just an external thing, because obviously I get it, we cannot often, and vulnerability is hard to, let's say, express externally, but particularly to strangers. Well, we can obviously do that in a small circle. Not many people even have a small circle, and a lot of people actually cannot even express it to themselves. So that's why they harsh inner critic, our mind, I remember the safety net that I spoke beforehand, kicks in. Because shame creates in our nervous system an overwhelming experience. And what does overwhelm mean? It means I feel helpless and powerless. And that's something we as human beings don't want to experience. So the mind kicks in as your protector. And that's why I'm saying, please reframe it. Don't see it as something nasty against you. It's your protector. And it kicks in and wants to save you through logic or thinking things through. So shame is a huge response to trauma in many shapes and forms. I don't need to name the details of the traumas, but it's basically what a wound is created, often shame, guilt, and that harsh inner critic follows. And that's where emotional, physical disconnect lies, and basically survival mode basically takes root.
It's interesting, isn't it, how some of us struggle with one thing and for others we don't. I always find it really interesting. Shame isn't one of those that I really struggle with, because I'm very much of the mindset, you know, we're all a work in progress. We've all made mistakes. We've all fallen short. It's like, for me, it's like even in the Bible, it says when one finger is pointed at you, you know, there's three pointing back. You know, for me, it's kind of interesting how, you know, we all are affected in different ways. And the most important thing here is to acknowledge and understand why we feel the way that we do. And then obviously look to then find different ways to be able to deal with that, whether it is like, you know, changing the role of what you perceive yourself? Or where do you feel like kudos comes in terms of managing something? So observing, I feel shame, or tagging that it's shame, but then not allowing it to then control the choices that you make. What's your thoughts on that, Caroline, in relation to not just we can either change our role, but actually what about managing, you know, that?
For example, when it comes to shame, and that's again something that's very much way deeper, you might not even notice that it is shame, because shame can come up in disguise.
Okay.
And that's again like that inner critic, that feeling of like, you're not good enough, you need to work harder, stay productive. It's also a shame wound basically running its course. It's subconscious, and that's where nervous system work lies. So the work is in a therapy setting or in my group work, how do we work with shame? I like it practical. So if you identified, and that's again, knowledge, understanding, self-awareness, that red line, oh my God, there is shame that comes from either somewhere. Maybe you remember, maybe you've been shamed before, criticized, et cetera, et cetera. Or you just have the awareness that it shows up in disguise somewhere. It's eventually also through, and this is where the healing work is a little bit cringe. It's basically counterintuitive in so many ways, and it doesn't obviously always follow exact logic, because it's not just mindset work. You actually create role play scenarios with your eyes closed. Basically, that's why the memory based parts come up. You can evoke emotions again by just thinking, and that's where the beauty of the mind and the body needing to work together actually takes a lot of basically like power here in your healing journey. Once you start these role play scenarios, it comes from like schema therapy as an example, you do the EMDR work, you're doing this really deep to the core challenging of those core beliefs, because shame is often one of those core beliefs that comes and travels with you through life and shows up in disguise somewhere. Then you can upgrade over time. And it's basically a layered way of looking at it. It's not just one straightforward one-time practice. It's a consistency, working with it from different angles. And I'm honestly telling you, and that's what I do not like about many people out there, you are not going to be able to fix this in a week, but you're able to feel changes after 3 to 6 months. Changes. And you're able to slowly, gradually rewire, update, and that's neuroplasticity and nervous system rewiring, or let's say parallel wiring. Then you find and feel these changes in your personality, because it is all basically retrainable, changeable. But it takes time, it takes dedication and consistency and bottom-up work, not top-down work. Top-down work is, I'll think more, I understand it more, and I stay stuck in this frustration because nothing is changing. Don't worry, talk therapy is not wasted, but you have not continued the other part of the work. That's the bottom-up work. I'm creating new felt experiences so that I can actually believe, and that's where your mind will catch up and follow, not the other way around. Your body goes first. There's an opportunity. There's a possibility that I can feel something different. There's a different outcome to what it was before. The threat is not there anymore that your nervous system once perceived. And there, the rewiring happens. And then the mind follows with different thoughts, different beliefs, and opportunities and possibilities. It's totally different.
Goodness. I feel like we could chat for like 5 hours, like, and
I love this topic. Once I found out, I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it probably still wouldn't be enough. I do want to touch on about perfectionism and overachievement. I think in the industry I'm in, the industry you're in, we're coming across and working alongside people that are high achievers, that are go-getters, that push the needle, that create, that evolve, that innovate, that are not satisfied, you know. High performers often tie their own self-worth directly to their accomplishments. I've read an article of where they interviewed, I think it was 100 CEOs that both had an unfortunate situation where they were either served notice from their position and at the same time as well, they'd been through a cancer diagnosis And it was something like 89% of them struggled more with losing their role than they did with being diagnosed with cancer. Like, that's like crazy, like, amount of how we associate our worth and identity with our accomplishments and our work. What subconscious stories drive this behavior, Caroline, and how can caregivers stop burning out for approval?
There's different, and I've done also my own research on this because I work with a lot of, let's say, high performers, high achievers, celebrities, you name it, people in these power positions. But one thing that I found, and I really have to say it like this, in all of them, is wounds in your childhood and past. And it's often it's linked to instability, chaos. For many of them, it was fear, basically also not being seen, emotionally neglected. You name it, it was there. There's also physical abuse. But again, also the tough one is the one that is invisible. That doesn't, I don't want to cross out, of course, that physical abuse is not bad, but it's very much clear. You can point it down. This will happen where the invisible traumas are very much like you call them as basically, that's my normal. That's all you know. But what high achievers often have is based on that instability in their life. That's also, I can give an example. Maybe that always helps. Someone is a huge, like I'm talking about hundreds of millions. He worked in the TV and media, let's say basically business for, and is hugely successful, sold his company, has mansions all over, but extreme childhood trauma, which meant he had even a point in his life where he said, I don't believe love exists. My mom and my dad do not love me. What's his takeaway? What's his personal journey? He invested, and like every child would, because you're smart and you're adaptable and we're all wired for survival. So we find our smartest and best possible way out. And for many, it's achievement, because that's the only place in school. If you have good grades, you get at least a thumbs up. We also know, and we're not stupid, we know eventually if I get good grades or if I achieve a lot, there's an opportunity I can get out of, and I'm sorry to say that, whatever shit I'm experiencing right now. And a lot of people in very highly successful, basically lives, and I'm pointing out as an example, Elon Musk, huge childhood trauma. The guy is hugely successful, absolute proof, of course, and he gets feedback all the time. But what happens, of course, it also brings, and that's another side to it that no one sees, a huge disconnect from your emotions. So many of them have tied their entire being around what they can produce, how they can be perceived by others, what they can bring to the table. For some extremes, maybe what they can put into the history books. But it doesn't erase that you're still a human, that you're still having needs that nag. And nagging looks like anxiety, mood issues like depression as an example, etc., etc. So that's something you cannot run away from and not buy yourself out of. And that's why people like that see people eventually like me or other therapists or join other coaches, because happiness you cannot buy. You might be achieving, you might have glimpses of moments where you feel something, but it's quickly, and that's the achievement wound, it's quickly replaced with the next goal, and you keep on running. And going back to my example of the guy who has 100 million, what do you think he's doing now? Do you really think he's sitting down and enjoying the money he has? No, he found another way after he's traveled the world, which again is productivity. He went to all the universities that you can think of, obviously big names now, but he's still in the achievement and productivity loop. He bent into, and you see it in billionaires, pointing them out. Look at just the internet. There are a lot of them. They're in the longevity hype. What does this mean? They're still in the self-perfection, self-basically improvement loop, but it still doesn't allow them to sit still. They're still not sitting with their feelings. They're still trying to patch something up. But underneath, the nagging keeps on creating that no medication will fix for you either. You cannot, and that's the hardest thing to say, but I've seen this in all the work that I've done for as my time as a psychologist, no matter who I worked with, you cannot outpay, outrun the deeper work. The only thing that you're doing is you're patching it up and pushing it for basically another time. That's just the truth. So why wait? Why keep on depriving yourself of real joy? You can have it all. That's what I believe. You can still be successful, achieving, and have a wonderful life.
I love that you've just ripped that open. Like, I think it's really, really important, you know, just to have that. You know, as someone holding space for trauma survivors, Caroline, while managing a global practice, what is the daily mental fuel or practice that keeps your own mind feeling nourished and grounded?
Oh, I do a lot of things and often nothing. There's a lot of joy and rest in my life, which I need. My nervous system, and I've done so much deeper work, you name it, I probably have done it, which basically came also to the point of like, I know what I really want and need. I need human connection. So I cannot just sit in my office. I need the people around me. I need love and hug. And I surround myself with the people. And I hire also people. And I love my team, Marcus, for example, who are on the right kind of frequency. There is love. There is unity. There's something that I need in order to be happy and joyful also in my work, to bring my best. And that's people and doing things together. I built my own community in small and in big. That's what I need. I also need to slow down. So I'm not running. And I was one of those people. And I, you know it. We are on this, you could work 24/7 kind of loop. But I know that rest, and that's what I needed to teach my nervous system and really believe it. Rest is not going to propel my business into failure. It doesn't mean I'm a bad person or that I'm lazy. I deserve rest like everyone else. And I deserve fun and joy. And then I can bring my best in the moments when I really choose to bring and go all in, but I'm not overextending myself, running myself into burnout. And I had all the physical things you can think of and all, unfortunately, I have to say it, traumas you can think of. I have worked with them. I've done and fixed, if the word fixing is the right thing, changed the things and the way I view myself. The way I hold relationships, the way I listen to my body and care for my body. Totally, it's changeable. And I would not sit here and do my work if I hadn't experienced it myself. No textbook, but I hope my book will teach you this, but no textbook will ever teach you this until you've experienced it. So my main aim is to help people to experience it themselves.
I can't think of a better way to have launched this new show on the UK Health Network than with you. It's been absolutely a pleasure and so real, so in-depth, so helpful. Thank you so much, Caroline.
Thank you, Mark. I am like my podcast, real, raw and authentic, I hope.
Absolutely. Really good. And I wish you all the best with your book coming out in 2027 as well. People can keep their eye on you for that one.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a true pleasure. Really wonderful. Good luck also with your radio show. It will be wonderful. I know it.
Thank you. You've been listening to Bread for the Head on the UK Health Radio Network with me, Mark Sefton. Thank you for taking the time to nourish your mind today. If this episode gave you some food for thought, please subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app and hit follow on the UK Health Radio Network so you never miss an episode. Until next week, protect your peace. Look after your inner world, and remember to keep feeding your head.